She told me that there's a point in birth where it feels like it's going to be death and not birth, but there's not one stinking thing you can do to stop it. You can fight, you can try, you can hold back, but you ain't going to stop it. And so there's that, there's an interval of time, perhaps different with every pregnancy, but there's an interval of time where the only thing you can do is give yourself up to it. And you don't know if you're going to die or a new life is going to come into the world. And I've thought about that many times when Jesus talked about this phrase. Because he's not given specific signs of the exact time. When the minute that he says the word birth pains, what he's saying is when you see these things I'm going to tell you happening with unprecedented frequency and unprecedented intensity, when the contractions are getting closer and closer together and more severe, something is about to happen. And those are the signs of the ends of the age and sign of Jesus is coming. So in that context, I think that's totally safe for us Gentiles to look at the days that we're living in and say, okay, these four things, these four birth pains, are any of these things happening today with a greater frequency and a greater intensity than before? That's the legitimate question. Not have there ever been wars. Well, there have always been wars. There's always been famine. There's always been earthquakes. There's always been pestilence. But let's just look at it like birth pains, okay? I wrote down some interesting statistics. I love statistics. By the way, the other thing that Jesus said that he repeats often and besides the phrase birth pains, as he says, watch out that you're not deceived. Anytime God repeats himself, look at what he just said, because he knows how we are and he knows how our enemy is. So let's look at these four things. First thing that I want you to see before we look at the list. Well, you know what? Maybe I should just not get ahead of myself. I skipped a whole page of notes. Verse 4, he says, watch out that no one deceives you, because many are going to come upon my name, saying, I'm the Messiah. John Corson claims that nobody ever claimed to be the Messiah until after Jesus came. I don't know where he got that information. There is some historical evidence that a few people claimed that, but the problem is nobody really believed them. I mean, they had 24 people that would, you know, run away into the mountains of Idaho with them or wherever, but you know, it wasn't like a national movement. But almost immediately after Jesus left and said these words, there was a man named Simon Bar Kokhba who got 500,000 Jews to follow him, saying that he was the Messiah, and they were all put to death and sort of squelched that whole deal. Anybody ever come along and claimed to be Messiah and had a large number of people follow them? Let's say just in your lifetime. I know of at least 4 or 5 people that have claimed that and had several million people follow them in my lifetime. I was just coming out of the train from Scotland down to London to, I believe it was called Charing Cross Station, a number of years ago. And I walked out of the station and I was looking around for somebody that looked familiar that was supposed to pick me up and give me a ride to my concert. Was it Charing Cross or Queen's Cross? Queen's Cross. King's Cross. Thank you. Something Cross. And I walked out and there was a big double-decker bus that pulled right up in front to let off some people, and there was a sign in letters about 18 inches or 2 feet tall, covering the whole side of the bus, that said Messiah is here. And I remember thinking, wow, George Friedrich Handel's oratorio is going to be played by the London Symphony. No, but that's not what I was talking about. It was the headline grabber from the London Times. And simultaneously, the London Times, San Francisco Chronicle, New York Times, and I can't remember what the European was besides the London Times, simultaneously full-page ads taken out by a guy who, to my knowledge, is still in Northern England, a guy named Benjamin Cream, who said that he was the Messiah, this was the announcement, and that he was going to be telepathically, you know, revealed to the whole world. He's still there, as far as I know. And you'd think, well, I never heard anything about it. But you know what? A couple of million people still believe he's the Messiah. Reverend Moon claims to be the Messiah. How many followers does he have? A few weirdos in an airport? Oh, no, he's got a huge number of people. There are a few guys that said it and have been discredited. Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh out in Oregon. And, of course, he got shown for what he was, and several Eastern leaders. But the interesting thing that separates them from just the world religion is these are men who stood up and said, I'm Jesus. Shirley MacLaine said a similar thing, but I'm not sure how many people actually believed her. But they said, I'm Messiah. This is the fulfillment of Jesus' promise. And large, large numbers of people believed it. So is the reason to be on our guard? Yeah, the whole false prophet thing freaks every pastor out. Because you realize that, you know, if somebody's got enough money to buy airtime or to print a book, or you can get your message out to millions and millions of people and say, this is the way God thinks. And you might be accurate, you might not be accurate. And there are people who don't research such things. And you can see why Jesus said to his followers, you guys, be careful that you're not deceived, because lots of people are going to come out representing him. Let's look at the birth pains. First thing, before that, I love the phrase in verse 6. You're going to hear about all of this stuff, but he says, don't panic. Can I tell you a funny story? I thought Michelle might appreciate this. In my first church, there was a lady. She kind of reminds me of you. She had just adorable kids. And, you know, was a really good mom. But she happened to have just got her last baby potty trained and out of diapers when I gave my first end time study. And it just bummed her out. And I remember she came up to me afterwards just in tears, sobbing. And she said, Pastor Bob, I just got my last child out of diapers. And now you're telling me Jesus is going to come and it's just going to ruin everything. And I... In my stupid bachelor male way, I didn't know that she was really feeling that, and I just laughed. See, and I'm still in ministry. Can you believe it? What she was saying is, I just want my life to be comfortable. And now you're telling me Jesus is going to come, and it's just going to ruin everything. You know what? I can appreciate that sentiment. But it's just, it is the wrong way to look at things. Nothing in this world that is good is going to last. And what we get when Jesus comes is going to be for billions and billions of years, and it's permanent. And there really is no comparison, but I do understand the feeling of panic. And I have noticed this. There's a direct correlation between the people who've heavily invested in the world system and the people who panic when Jesus says it's all going to go down. there's a connection there. I love what you said, Joe, about the difference between your life now and your life a few years ago when, you know, you had all this great, you know, future and the 401ks and all that stuff, and all you did was stay awake and worry about it all the time. And now you look at it, you just pretty much don't have anything but Jesus, and you have no worries whatsoever. Total peace. Lots of us have experienced that. But if you've set all of your hopes in the Republicans getting back in power, or all your hopes in Islam being proven to be a hoax and a lie, or global warming or climate change being proven to be true or not true, depending on which side you sit on, if you put all your hopes in that, you're going to be disappointed, and Jesus' words are going to really be an interruption. There's a reason why they've been recorded and preserved for us all this time. It's so that we will have hope. And he says, don't panic. There's four little words. Such things must happen. Spoken by Jesus, who knows the end from the beginning. He's saying, look, it doesn't do any good to panic. This stuff is unavoidable. This is the plot line. Humans aren't going to change it. Where I grew up in the upper left-hand corner, from your side of the U.S., I know lots of people who are environmentalists, even before it was real popular. And I had some interesting conversations with them, because both of us had the same starting viewpoint. We had the viewpoint that the world is a sinking ship. I think we both agreed. But we both had a complete disagreement about what you do about it. They were going to keep it from sinking. We're going to patch the holes, and we'll pass laws and get other people to patch the holes, and we're going to keep the ship from sinking. And my philosophy was, no, you're not. I appreciate that you're going to make the effort, because it will give me a longer time to rescue the crew before it goes down. But it is going to go down. We aren't going to prevent it from happening. And I know people that are devoting their lives to trying to keep the ship from sinking. And to me, that at least the intent is commendable, however futile it's going to be. But I'm giving my life to one thing. It's why I'm here. It's why I'm not living on an island in Washington, sailing my boat. I just want to rescue as many people as I can before it goes down. I want to talk to as many people who love Jesus and tell them about him, and help people to have an earthly perspective that's adjusted to the eternal perspective, so they live their lives for him, so that other people can be rescued, because we aren't going to prevent it from sinking. So don't be alarmed. It's going to happen. It's interesting. Next week we'll look at Jesus said, look, don't forget I told you in advance. When you see it happening, don't forget I told you. So it's not a surprise. Oh no, I can't believe this is happening. No, he says, no, I'm going to tell you in advance. So when it happens, you'll realize I told you. So I must know what's going on. So let's look at these four birth pangs. And if you're interested in writing this down or listen to the tape later. I don't remember all these details, so that's why I had to write them down. We talk verse 7 about nation rising against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There is a difference in the biblical language, the original language, between a nation and a kingdom. And the kingdom would be what we would call a superpower. And the whole language in Greek, and what the original language here of what Jesus is saying, that these are global conflicts, not just local flare-ups, not just one tribe against another tribe in Africa, not just Northern Ireland against Southern Ireland, or, you know, it's a bigger deal. And it is significant that in our lifetime, some of us, there have been two global conflicts. So think of that as a birth pain. Wars. Always have been wars. I don't know if any of you read this, but a number of years ago, the EU, the European Union, produced a document called the War Atlas. It was sort of a research paper that they wrote on war. And this is an interesting statistic in light of birth pains, frequency and intensity. They said this: since World War II ended, which was 1945, since 1945, there has not been one day on planet Earth of absolute peace. Not one day. There hasn't been one day when there wasn't a war going on somewhere on this planet. Now, that was not true up until 1945. I would think that qualifies as a birth pain, in frequency and intensity. This same document, the War Atlas, said that there, and of course this was a number of years ago, this was actually a couple of decades ago, it said there were over 600 million active and reserve soldiers on duty in the world. over 50% of scientists were working on weapons. Not means for humanitarian rescue. And of course, this once again is a couple of years ago. It says that over 40% of all dollars throughout the world spent on science were spent for weapons research and development. What's the difference between other times in history and global conflict or global heating up between nations and superpowers? What's the difference between other times in history and today? Well, I already told you that one statistic. It takes a lot fewer people to destroy everything than it ever did. Part of that's because of the weapons that we have. The world is also more interconnected than it ever was. So there is a different aspect to global conflict in the days we live in. The labor pains are greater intensity, greater frequency. Famine, another one of the birth pains. During 1 4-year period, and I haven't compiled all the statistics on famine, but during 1 4-year period in Northern Africa, 40 million, wrap your brain around that, 40 million people starved to death in a 4-year period in Northern Africa. And there was plenty of food. But the food had been diverted by the corrupt governments of those North African countries. And the leaders got wealthy. And when we sent the foreign aid and other countries sent the food was diverted and sold. And 40 million people starved to death. There have always been famines. There have never been so many. In all of human history, never been so many people starved to death as there are today. One reason is obvious, that there's more people on the planet. From zero to 1857, it took that long for the world to get 1 billion people. Since 1857, we have doubled that number about halfway between there and now every 20 years. And in the last 20 years, we've more than doubled that. It's just that exponential deal. At the same time, and I can't, you might know this, Mark, being a growing up in the breadbasket of the U.S., but the last statistic that I read said that the viable topsoil in the primary growing part of the United States has shrunk down to 3 inches. You think, well, how much topsoil do you need? Well, in Canada, in the prairie provinces where they grow all that wheat, there's 10 feet of topsoil. And we're known as the breadbasket of the U.S. There's less food worldwide in storage right now than there was in 1920 when the whole world went through tremendous food shortages. Are you worried? I'm just lifting up my head because I know my rescuer is coming. Pestilences, the word means plagues, which is sort of like disease on steroids. You know, a plague is something that affects just huge numbers of people. And I would think normally the definition of this word pestilence is a disease that nobody has an answer for. And of course, there have always been plagues. But they've almost always been localized because the world wasn't as interconnected as it is today. So if there's a plague that happens somewhere, everybody has to be nervous. And the Center for Disease Control freaks out over H1N1. And of course, they took a whole bunch of steps and it didn't turn out as bad as they thought. Could it have? Oh, very easily. I can't even give you the statistics about AIDS because we're not told the truth about it. It's way worse than we think. It would absolutely, if you are such a person to be afraid of such things, it would chill your bones. Greater frequency, greater intensity. You know, I don't take antibiotics for my killer headaches that I have, because there's a whole fleet of germs out there that antibiotics don't phase them. And the more antibiotics that you take, the stronger the germs get. And that qualifies as a pestilence, by the way, something that humans don't have an answer for. Birth pains, frequency and intensity. Oh, but don't worry. Be happy. Obama will fix everything. Or the next British leader will fix everything, or the European Union will fix everything, or the Chinese will take over and they'll fix everything. Or, no, you know what? Get real. Earthquakes. This is kind of an interesting one. The U.S. Geodetic Survey. These are the people that study the tectonic plates. In 1976, this is really interesting, in 1976, quoted verbatim from the report, it said, in the coming decades, earthquakes are going to come upon the whole world with increasing frequency and intensity. Thank you. Thanks for saying that. Have they? Do you know that since that statement was made, there have been more killer earthquakes than in all recorded human history combined? What is that, 34 years? Last time I did the math that way, I was wrong by 10 years. But in a short period of time, cosmically, a short period of time in world history, more killer earthquakes than all of recorded history combined. Of course, if you had even high school science, you understand that when the tectonic plates are shifting, it's why you'll see an earthquake happen over here, and then on the other side of the continent, there'll be another one because everything's shifting and adjusting itself, and you don't know when it's going to happen. They're getting better at predicting things, but still being surprised, we just know they're going to happen. Interesting little prophecy in Isaiah 24. He said that at the time right before God pours out his judgment, which I don't believe we are going to be around to experience, but it said in the time before that, it says the earth is going to stagger like a drunken man. Interesting. So when you see this stuff, Jesus says, don't panic. Just think of it as labor pains. And then he says in verse 9 and 10, you, plural. And I believe he's talking to believers. I've read some commentaries that say he's talking only to Jewish believers. I think that's a stretch. He's talking to disciples, those who are serious followers. He said, in those days, you're going to be handed over and persecuted. That started immediately. In fact, in the first 300 years after the resurrection, under the period of the next 10 Caesars in the Roman Empire, over 6 million Christians were put to death. There are millions of Christians being put to death right now in this world. You don't hear anything about it, do you? There are regimes in place in the world where if you claim to be a believer in Christ, your life is forfeit. And of course, we feel bad if someone just cusses at us for being intolerant, but Jesus said, you're going to be hated by all nations because of me. And I already said the thing of that sort of certainly doesn't jive with the popular philosophy that some Christians have today that we're going to take over. You know, everyone's going to love us. We're just going to get more and more wonderful. Let's build those really big churches so everyone can see how advantageous it is to be a Christian and be rich. And we'll take over and everything will be groovy. And the Bible said, no, it ain't the way it's going to happen. By the way, that sort of crossed my mind when the Lord called me to be a pastor again. And I thought, that's like painting a target on your t-shirt, especially if you live in Maine, where people are so openly hostile towards Christianity. You know, can I just live on my little island and be a closet Christian? I'll just worship Jesus and he and I have a great time and I won't be in anybody's face. Jesus said this. He said, you're like a city set on a hill. You can't be invisible. You can be a good witness or you can be a bad witness, but you can't be invisible. And he said in verse 10, many are going to abandon the faith and betray each other. And that also is happening in large numbers with great frequency. Many false prophets will appear. I would think that just the advent of certain technologies would tell you that that's going to happen with greater frequency. I can't even keep up with technology. I don't even know what the latest words are. Twitting or, you know, FaceTube or whatever, you know. But you can pretty much get an audience that's pretty much now worldwide. Say whatever you want to say. So I think that's sort of a kind of a part of the birth pains of false prophets, that increasing with frequency and intensity. Sort of interesting. And I want to close with this. Because of the increase of wickedness, and remember what wickedness means? We've talked about this a number of times. Wickedness is not that you just don't know any better. Wickedness means you know the right thing and you know the wrong thing, and you deliberately, knowing that, choose the wrong thing. Because people have made those kinds of choices to such a degree. Jesus is saying here that the love, just love, period, non-self-centeredness, true affection for God and for other people, it's going to get colder and colder and harder. As I said earlier, the King James Bible says it's going to wax cold. We'll pick up here next week, because I want to say this. My friends that are trying to keep the ship afloat, they feel like they're doing something. You just compost your little heart out, buddy. You aren't going to keep the ship from sinking. But I commend their responsibility. Is there anything I can do and that you can do about people's hearts growing so cold that you're going to have a hard time finding any love for God or any love for people, for other people? I've never in my whole life, and I've been around 61 years now, I've never seen so many mothers that abandon their families. I've seen a lot of guys do it. I've not seen so many mothers do it. My mom abandoned us. So, I mean, that hits me close to my heart, but I've just never seen anything like it. And the thing that's shocking is most of the ones, I can name you 10 people right now that were church people. And I'm thinking something, even the Bible says something about that's not normal. Something's out of whack for that to happen. What can I do? Is there anything I can do to prevent people's love from getting colder and colder and colder? Yeah, I can't make you love each other. I can't make you love God. But I can do what I'm doing. You can do what you're doing. Have you ever had your love for God get colder and colder and start to harden? Happened in my life. You know what pulled me out of it? Somebody that was on fire, flaming in love with Jesus coming into my life. It totally changed me. God didn't come in and say, you shape up, buddy, or you're going to burn in hell. You know, it wasn't that at all. I just saw somebody that was living for Jesus like he was real. And crazy in love with him, and it softened my heart, and then I became crazy in love with him. That's what we can do. I can tell you what the enemy wants. He wants to get you hypnotized with distraction.